It's not often you read a business biography that serves up thought-provoking lessons and insights into the entrepreneurial journey here in South Africa, but also lessons in the far more important journey of life and finding purpose in one's existence, at once marrying business and actually being a better person. And that's exactly what Growing Greatness does. It's the story of how Pepe Maria and his co-founders built Joe Public, lost it, bought it back, built it again into the largest independent ad agency in the country, and had a rocking good time along the way, through life, through inner discoveries, and a deeply personal story that certainly resonated with me for several reasons. Pepe, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
I think for most people who know you and who know Joe Public, they wouldn't be too surprised by the second half of the book. But the first half of the book I've really found quite intriguing, and a window into the choices that shaped you at the end of the day. And you were very frank and forthright and courageous about your alcoholic father. I also had a father who suffered with drink, perhaps not to the extent that it killed him. But that is certainly what happened to your father. And it could be the story of so many broken families in South Africa. But you used this almost as a lens through which to grow. And the way you framed that experience, I found quite fascinating. Just share those early years with us.
I'd love to know. I mean, that must be, and you would have seen that I dedicated the book to my father, because to our conversation just before we went on air now, like everything I view with a more positive frame of mind because of it. And somewhere in my journey, that really quite traumatic first 14 years was turned on its head to become quite empowering. And I learned through the years that you either become exactly like your father or the opposite, you know, and I've become the opposite. But my pendulum has swung so far the opposite, and I think it's because he swung so far into the negative. And huge things. I mean, driven to start working at 12 was the byproduct of that. And I really wanted to share it so openly because I think we're sitting on a positive time bomb in South Africa. You know, we're sitting on a huge population of poverty, and the first step to inspire doing your own thing is actually to get out of the poverty, to get out of the negative into the positive. That's the first step. If I had to say my first step into entrepreneurism was to make money. As I started to make money, I realized it's never about the money. But, you know, fascinating. When I constructed the book, I just realized I have to tell that bit of the story as a way of inspiring people that your context does not define you.
And that's what I found so inspiring. And you, a big fan of Steve Jobs, he also used struggles or saw struggles as opportunities, which has been a key mantra and is indeed a key theme that you allude to in the book.
I just love, I said the other day, there's two brands I absolutely love, and the one is Apple and the other one is Nike. And those are still to this day two brands that are doing things in a completely different way to the norm. And I'm constantly seeking new ways, even as a medium enterprise in South Africa, as a business, trying to find new ways of doing business. And even in the last year since I finished the book, I've got more and more new thoughts that are just coming to me of how can we do business that's not about the bottom line. So it's not about just the bottom line. And Steve Jobs points towards it. Nike, Phil Knight points towards it. Locally, one of our top 10 big businessmen as a friend of mine points towards it. I'm like, I want to point towards it.
And your real anchor is this almost conscious capitalism, this finding the reason for being in business beyond the bottom line, beyond the profit. And I think many businesses struggle with that. I think many individuals struggle with that because, as you allude to in the book, it's a grudge purchase going to work for a lot of employees. You've got to make that a love purchase. You've got to make the environment fertile enough to bring out the best in people. It wasn't always like that, though. Just take me back right to the beginning, because I loved the story of how you actually founded Joe Public and the story of how a surfer met a paddle skier without really realizing it. I think the serendipity in this story is absolutely phenomenal.
It's incredible. It's incredible. I mean, the mere... And I don't know if we ever would have moved into partnership. I mean, I was already going because we had this idea for takeaway advertising between myself and my first partner, Noel. from my house in Melville, where we came up with this thought, and then looking for a business partner because we're both creatives, which is also interesting that we perceive ourselves as creative, hence not business-like, which is not completely the truth, because the business partner I found is actually, he paints, so he's actually more creative possibly. And we've got this very interesting yin and yang relationship. But to find out on the first night that I meet him at a bar in Cape Town that he factually saved my life 3 years before I ever met him was dumbfounding. I mean, that was the key that was just like, that's it. We're giving up our jobs tomorrow and we're going. And I think without that, we would not have maybe moved. Who ever knows?
And it's opening yourself up to those signs very often that are put in front of us, following your heart sometimes more than your head. And another big theme that you talk about in the book is sometimes we do follow the head and not the heart enough. Why is that? Do you think it's encoded into the South African DNA to be slightly more conservative?
I'm respectful of every single client that we have. By their grace, we've got a business. But before them actually comes our people. By our people's grace, we've got a business. And then secondly, by our client's grace, we've got a business. But in my dealings with corporate South Africa, every single one of our 50 clients bar two. So 48 out of 50 are corporate environments. And those businesses, the original founder does not exist in the business anymore. And I think there's a different set that those businesses operate by. Because in the two entrepreneurial businesses, I find more room to move, more autonomy, more trust, more partnership. And I think there are definitely two different ways of operating, and I'd so love to bring that insight into corporate because we're also just a pyramid scheme. As a business, I can't now say, ooh, we're so giving. We also got shareholders at the top, myself included. But I think there's an opportunity to look beyond money, because I find when you're in a corporation, you are driven by bottom line and by bottom line growth and by margins first and foremost. And I think we're missing a point, because that is not what drives a true business. And I think I would love, if I had more time to really research, because this is all coming out of my thumb. You know, I don't know if I said it, and I can't even remember what I wrote, but I sucked it out of my thumb, because I say that's connected to my gut and that's where the wisdom is. Not much came out of my head. But I really believe that the more you focus on something greater than the bottom line, the more your bottom line expands.
And that is demonstrated through the shared value model, if you want to actually put a label on it. And we see Peter Drucker is now teaching that at Harvard. We know Discovery is using it very well in its vitality business. How do we do good business? By doing good in society, by doing good by our employees, by our stakeholders, by a broader set of stakeholders than just those shareholders at the top and the employees at the bottom. And you've got various philanthropic ventures as well. But I think quite instructive was that story of how you actually lost it all. And I believe you've got a frame cork hanging in your office with the words, never ever sell your soul. And probably one of the more instructive business lesson stories I've read, when you sold to FCB. But it was really in that time that you write about the creativity and that drive being sucked out of the business.
And and I suppose maybe there's another, that you're so right. Maybe there's a way that if you within a big corporation that's such a big ship that it doesn't really, it's already on its course and it's doing well enough, you don't realize how much better it can do because you haven't had that deep learning to really see factually that when we lost our obsession with product and service, it's so simple, like a restaurant, product and service. The bottom line just over a period of 8 years just went down and down and down and down. And when we bought the business back and we got our obsession back, product and service, everything just started going better again. And then with the growth slightly losing that way again, and I think that's because more and more people quickly joined our fold that weren't completely aligned to the way we do business, and also not pointing towards them because they didn't know better, and we kind of started flattening out again, and then to refocus on something greater than bottom line, and again seeing the bottom line returns naturally. So to me, it's almost, it's amazing. The more you give, the more you get. It's in the Bible. That must be quite a good book. I keep on saying that's a very good marketing campaign if you look how many books that one sells. But it's fascinating. I think if you really can show that giving more of yourself to a greater community pays more, I mean, what a wonderful way to do business. But I don't think people are conscious of it.
But you have to be very conscious of that. I think it's not something you can just get an outside consultant in to do. And I think Matthew Bull taught you a very important lesson about culture, a very instructive lesson, because I think a lot of companies just hire outside experts to come and, and do the culture for them, and it's a thing on the side. And if you don't believe it, if you don't truly drive that culture or that ethos or that purpose of being in business through an organization, it's destined to fail. And I think so often why culture is almost poo-pooed, and a lot of CEOs I chat to, when I ask them about culture, they kind of go a little bit strum, a little bit quiet, a little bit cold, and they start sweating. Because it does seem to be something that exists out there. How have you driven the culture of growth and all of these ideas through Joe Public to create this fantastic turnaround story from that point where you really were down and out back in 2006-07 to where you are now, the largest ad agency, independent ad agency in the country?
So again, I'm so conscious that there is no truth. So this is just my belief. You know, whether it's true or not, time will tell. But to experience in our industry, which is a pretty flat industry in this economy over the last decade, 48% year-on-year growth, I mean, that has to stand for something. That's nothing short of super unusual. So there must be something going on there. The way I drive it, and if I'll speak for myself personally, because Gareth will agree, I'm probably the strongest driver of it, because I think my experience in terms of personal purpose was so deep. I think where I found myself at 2006 in my personal life was far worse than Gareth. I think our business was similar, but on a personal level, I think he might have been more stable. I think in terms of my background, where I come from, I think he might have had a more stable background as well. I know for a fact he does. I love his parents.
Where did you find yourself back then in 2006? Chewing the worm at the bottom of a tequila bottle, you know, living the rock star life, but not a sustainable life.
Well, not for my mathematical mind, which is very sound and mathematical, which is why I'm into music as well. But it did not make sense, because I know how hard I work. I mean, in our environment, there's one. Our French partner, Laurent, is probably the one person that can outwork me. I've never met anyone that can work to the level that he does.
But you weren't getting the output.
I was working like I've always worked. I am very talented at what I do. I know that. I've been doing it for such a long time. I've been putting so much in, and the output, it didn't line up. It did not make sense to me on all levels, on a physical level with my health, on a personal level with my personal relationship, on a monetary level, on a business level. Even my little do-good that I was doing, which was serving my own little ego, I had a thing originally before one school called Rock for AIDS. When I looked at it hardly, looked truthfully more, I realized I was doing it just to create a platform to play music and to look cool. You know, so I realized everything I was doing was in service of myself and my ego. It wasn't conscious. It wasn't like I was a bad guy. I was just unconsciously doing things completely in service of myself. And the output just did not match the input. And I went and I went and found direction, something deeper and more spiritual. And I found it, and my life changed overnight to a high degree. And I thought, I mean, I actually, Jane Goodall said that just like monkeys are monkey beings, or just like humans are human beings, monkeys are monkey beings, and dogs are dog beings, and cats are cat beings. And that sort of construct I've never heard before. I thought, geez, that's interesting. I remember looking at my dog in his eyes that night going, this is a dog being. It's not just a dog. There's a soul in this creature. And that opened my mind to the concept, maybe a business is a business being. maybe there's a business, it's got the more logical side, and it's got the logical name, and maybe on the other side there's the being.
Well, Mervyn King likes to say it's a juristic person, that these things we do create, and therefore one can't detach the impacts of business on the broader community and society in which we exist. And there is a global movement now. You mentioned Larry Fink of BlackRock, one of the largest asset managers in the world, driving business leaders to really think deeply about their impact on their communities, their stakeholders, the environment, all of these different actors in the world. Now, something that really struck me about your book, obviously the aha moment and finding the strength to recalibrate who you were and to course correct, I think requires amazing strength. But your daily routine is just something else. I mean, you start at 4:20. I think a lot of stoners might be laughing at that particular rise time. But what really astounded me is the way you segment and you measure back to your mathematical brain. Your day, your month, your week, your year, you've got a 25-year plan. Mm. Some might say you're a little bit OCD in that regard, but I think there's a good lesson. Would you consider yourself OCD?
No, I'd consider myself CDO. I don't know if you heard that. It's OCD, but alphabetically in order. So, yes, I'm completely OCD, and I'm completely fanatical. Gareth actually shared a bit of wisdom that he picked up from, I don't know who the guy was, he went to see one morning. I missed it. I don't know what I was supposed to make it, but it was a beautiful insight. I think you get, he said there's four types of people you get: aggressively good, passively good, passively bad, aggressively bad. I think I'm an aggressively good person. So I'm super aggro, and I attack life in a positive way daily. And I take Sundays as my bit of a breather.
Now, let's just end off, and we could carry on for the rest of the show, but unfortunately I think we are running out of time. Just talking about that essence of your philosophy, because you found out that the way to exceed your potential of your input exponentially is to understand the two states. So we've got the human state, the conscious mind, and then that being state, back to your point, with the unconscious mind. And it might sound a little bit too esoteric for a lot of corporate boardrooms in South Africa, but what you really discovered is quite mathematical if you look at the computing power of the two states and what we can actually achieve.
I have no doubt in my mind there's a greater spiritual reason for each human to be on this planet. And if you do find what it is one word, just like your name, Michael, given by your parents, is your human name. There's a spiritual name that's been given to you by the grace of something bigger, which none of us understand. I found that I unpacked the meaning, which I think is super important, in my personal life. It has changed everything. I mean, and I sometimes throw numbers at it because that's what people get. But it increased my wealth by 100-fold. I was chasing wealth. I never made money. But when I found my greater purpose, I started creating wealth for myself without wanting to do that. I put that philosophy, by the grace of my partners buying into it, into our business. Our business has grown from 30 people to 300 people. It has 20-fold increased our revenues. And we haven't even started. Now, if that's not good business, then I don't know what's good business. So I live my life by it. It works for me. And anyone who's interested in me bringing that insight to their business, I will share it with anyone gladly.
Or they can just go and pick up a cup of Growing Greatness.
Or do that.
It's a small glimpse, though. There's a whole lot more to it. We haven't even gone into Robin Sharma's 8 Wells. I think a lot of people will be able to rattle off, if they feel fairly evolved and self-actualized, maybe 4, you know, spirituality, financial wealth, health, family. But there are 4 others. But I want to conclude on your real passion, which comes all the way through the book and is actually at the apex of your 25-year plan, education. And I'm a firm believer that our education system is designed in an industrial era to create widgets that can parrot fashion, regurgitate what they're told to learn, but it really does stifle creativity. So how do you plan to shake up the education system?
So when I was given that vision, because vision only happens, real vision, profound vision in my book, happens when you find profound purpose to your life. That's when, for the first time, when you can shape a real vision, is when you have a real purpose to your life. That came to me through a process, and it's so different from what I aimed to before that. I remember the first couple of years, I was sweating at night because I didn't know how I'm going to fulfill it. It's huge. I want to overhaul the education system completely. There's 22,000 dysfunctional schools in South Africa out of 27,000. That's 80%. If you don't fix education, you cannot fix the economy. You just can't. You keep on feeding the already existing gap between the rich and the poor with a very, very underprivileged educational system. So that's at its basic. But I would argue that sometimes even your best schools are not doing the best job of creating holistic human beings, because there's so much focus on IQ, and there's emotional intelligence, spiritual intelligence, resilience, the need to bring entrepreneurial thinking into school. So I have got a big plan, and I've started with one school, and we've been at it for, what's it now, 10 years, a decade, going into our 11th year. And I think it's going to play out like business or like a good investment. It starts compounding at some stage, and then it goes exponential. And I'm going to keep at it. I'm aiming towards 2032 to position myself into a higher role of influence to make a difference, whatever that role will be. And if that never happens, then I will know that every single day I did my best towards that vision. Every single day, that's what I aim for. It's in the back of my head. Right now I'm focusing on business and serving our people and our clients. But in the back of my head, I just came back from Lapalala Wilderness School, where 60 of our kids are for 4 days. I went and popped in there. And it was amazing just to see that difference that you're making. So, yeah, that's the big play. That's my I'm in year 11 of my 25-year plan.
And you've still got some exponential years in front of you. It's great to hear that people with your vision and energy are attacking what I believe to be the country's foremost challenge, and that is education. You know, Nick Spall put it to me the other day. He said, of the CSI spending in the country, around $9 billion, probably over 50% of that, just over 50%, say $5 billion spent on education. Our budget is orders of magnitude higher, $300 billion odd. So there is a huge gap financially, but also just in terms of the way we structure that system. So lots of work to do there. Pepe, fantastic to read your book. Thank you very much for sharing and for inspiring and for being a true advocate for a new way of doing business, which is clearly good for shareholders, but good for everyone else at the same time. So with that,
thank you so much.
I'm going to say cheerio.
Thank you very much.
And that's a wrap for Classic Business this week. An evening of great music in store for our Cape Town listeners with Rod Miller. And in Gauteng, Carolyn Steyn is getting ready to rumble along with his Highveld Thunderstorm for her double bill of classic cocktails to take you into the weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday. Good night. Until then, make it count.